Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is New York State Comptroller, and I really love this guy, Tom DiNapoli. Welcome back, Tom, my favorite public official of all.
Oh, too kind, Alan, but thank you. It's great to be back with you.
Now, former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin has been found guilty of the murder of George Floyd on all counts. Your reaction?
Justice was served. Obviously, would have been better if George Floyd was still alive. You can't get that life back. The fact that a mixed jury in terms of race and background so quickly came to the conclusion that the officer was guilty on all counts, I think, sends a strong message that, in fact, the American criminal justice system can work for all. So, I mean, you know, from my point of view, had it been any other verdict, the level of disappointment would have been severe and deep. So still big issues out there in terms of the reckoning on racial injustice that continues, and more work needs to be done. But I think obviously it was a day where justice was served.
So you're the controller. You deal with money all the time. Is there a way to measure the financial impact on individuals and families, businesses, the society as a result of systematic racism? For example, the police, as the trial was over, the reaction of the street seemed pretty strong.
And rightfully so. And I think it's also important to point out, and I think even some of the, you know, some of the inner circle, you know, on behalf of the Floyd family and some of the commentary pointed out that, we have to keep in mind that we also need good men and women in law enforcement, and most of them are that. Derek Chauvin is not the typical, but we also know that there have been too many instances that continue of unarmed people of color in police encounters that end up losing their lives. There's clearly something wrong. So, you know, in terms of the issue of quantifying just broadly systemic racism, you know, I've seen some different studies, both in terms of lost GDP, but also projecting forward if there is more equity and inclusion in our economy, the trillions of dollars more in GDP that, you know, in growth that we'd see. So, you know, the corporate response, I think that we've been seeing in many levels, certainly in the wake of the Floyd murder, to really redouble efforts on policies related to diversity, equity, and inclusion. I think those are key. Even workplaces that have been good on that front, I think we would all acknowledge, and this goes for the public sector as well, for government, we have to redouble our efforts. We clearly still have a ways to go. So with the right spirit and a positive point of view, but a willingness to admit that we are far from perfect, I think, in fact, there will be a bottom line benefit to having an economy that truly is one that provides opportunity for all.
Now, as the sole trustee, as the sole person who makes up his mind of how to spend all those millions of dollars, the state pension fund, does this come into play at all? Do you take a look and say, well, yeah, this would not be a good signal, this would be a good signal?
Yeah. No, absolutely. You know, we, as part of our corporate engagement, we have reached out to our portfolio companies and raised the issue of what are your policies and practices on diversity, equity, and inclusion. One of the area of focus, particularly that we've spent a lot of time on and continue to, is looking at the boards of directors, you know, the leadership of corporations, to make sure that they are diverse. You know, going back a few years, we worked in coalition, particularly with regard to ensuring that there'd be more women on boards. And now we've redoubled our efforts to make sure that there are racial minorities included on boards of directors. And we will vote against all white boards when those slates are put forward. And in a recent shareholder proposal that we put forward with Amazon, which has become obviously a ubiquitous presence and a huge part of the marketplace in this country and globally, we have filed a shareholder resolution requesting that there be a racial equity audit of Amazon, that they contract for that, an independent third-party review of their policies on diversity, equity, inclusion. There have been a lot of issues raised. It's been covered in the press in terms of their treatment of workers, workplace practices, where they cite some of their business activity in terms of negative impact on communities of color, their warehouse workers, particularly who are by and large Black and Latinx, how they've been treated. And unfortunately, Amazon tried to knock our shareholder resolution off of the ballot for the annual meeting. Well, we were very pleased. The SEC just recently upheld our right as a shareholder to file that resolution. So we're hoping for a favorable outcome when that annual meeting happens. So, yeah, we are trying to be part of the conversation and to press corporate America to be responsive on these issues.
You know, Tom, I know you're not going to like this, but I think it's incumbent on me to mention it. Your name is being bandied about by some of your friends and some of your not friends as a potential candidate for governor of New York. Now, you're the comptroller, you're independently elected. It would make sense that your name is being raised, but it was particularly raised, as you know, by the Cuomo people and saying you're being political when you shouldn't be, as if he wasn't once attorney general of the state doing some political stuff himself. He went after Elliot Spitzer, for example. So what is your reaction to all that?
Well, I mean, let me say, first of all, and I think I've been doing this job long enough that I don't say this in a boastful way, and I think most objective observers would agree, I would think. You know, we do the job that we're elected to do here at the Comptroller's Office, and we take that responsibility seriously. And, you know, certainly in the case of, you know, some of the questions that came up after we did the referral to the Attorney General, you know, that was done after much thought and very consistent with what people expect us to do, to ask the important questions. I think I'm the least politically calculating of any of the players that are around these days, and too old to change in that regard. And, you know, I think my work stands on its own. It has since 2007 when I started as controller. And I know very often, whether it's an audit or a report, people will say, oh, he's being political. He's been, you know what? We're a professional shop here. Most of our employees are civil service. I don't know whether they're Republicans or Democrats. And when we make a decision on an audit or a policy or referral, whatever we're doing, a report, you know, we're calling it as we see it. That's what people expect from the controller. And I'm focused on doing my job and doing it in the right way. And I'm not worried about the politics at the moment.
So just to fill us all in, because not everybody pays that much attention to all this, you know, stuff. What exactly did you do when you made it? What was the referral about to the Attorney General?
Well, you know, in sum, and I can't say, you know, too much other than, you know, obviously there have been questions raised about the use of public resources in the executive chamber for private purposes, some of that relating to the book. We're all familiar with. And we felt that those allegations were serious enough to warrant a further review. And under the existing authority that we have to do what is called a referral to the Attorney General, consistent, by the way, with a partnership we've had with that office that, you know, even predates Tish James's tenure, we did that, which gives them the authority to do an investigation with a criminal jurisdiction to see if there are, you know, if there is anything to those allegations. I can't say more about it. I mean, it is now, you know, subject to the investigation that the Attorney General's office will lead. If there's any support they need from us, we're available for that. And if there's nothing amiss or inappropriate, then, you know, then there's nothing for anybody to be worried about.
So Tom DiNapoli makes a referral to Tish James about whether the Cuomo book, which brought in $4 million and allegedly he had people do some work for him, who worked for him, that's against the state law. I find a certain irony here that you've made a referral to the other person who is always being suggested might run against Andrew Cuomo besides yourself, Tish James. Do you have a chat with her about that?
Nope. Nope. Have not. Don't expect to.
How come?
I think Tish James, like myself, we have an awful lot of work to do, and we're just focused on doing our jobs. I know I'm proud to be the state controller. I'm sure Tish is proud to be the attorney general, and she's doing a great job. And our plate is full. And as I've talked about on your show before, my plan has been to run for re-election as state controller. I haven't seen a reason to change that plan thus far.
Now, Cuomo's guy, Rich Azzopardi, who I should confess was my student years ago on the Legislative Gazette. But I have a question for you. He said you jumped the shark or something like that. What was that about?
I don't know, but now I understand better, you know, some of his excesses that he learned it at the feet of the master. So now I fully understand where he gets some of his bad habits from. But I don't
Absolutely.
Know. Look, I mean, what can I say? I mean, I don't think his comments were worthy of any response or reply from me.
Well, he didn't learn as I did from Madame Beerbaum, but that's another whole story.
Had he been enrolled in that French class, he would have had more style and certainly been more fluent in the beautiful Renaissance romance language.
well, that's right. Okay, so you called on the governor to resign after revelations of alleged sexual harassment of women. Many who work for him. His troubles have only mounted since then with the counting of nursing home deaths, the Mario Cuomo Bridge, and more. Do you still think he should resign? Could I have a yes or a no, and then a couple of paragraphs?
I'm just going to give you a yes.
Okay, now the paragraph.
Like some others, my concern is for the state navigating through a challenging time, and that's no presumption on innocence, guilt, or, you know, on the substance of some of what's been raised. But, you know, I think in terms of what the states need in terms of undistracted leadership right now, I think that would be in the best interest of the state. So, you know, I'm not going to say more about it than that.
I heard the president of the Senate say that they were seriously interested in ethics reform in the legislature. Now, I've been around legislators for a long time. And I don't think they like me that much. But my question is this. Why would they do ethics reform to get at the governor when, in fact, they're the ones who need the ethics reform?
Well, I don't think that Andrew Stewart Cousins was suggesting that the legislature be exempt from a more serious review on questions of ethics. Certainly, look at the history past couple of decades. There are any number of headlines that we could point to for legislators that have acted inappropriately. So, look, I think there's a general sense that the J-COPE process does not work for various reasons.
That's the Joint Commission on Legislative Ethics, J-COPE.
Not just legislative. Yeah, it's public ethics. So, I mean, I think to the need to reform the J-COPE process, maybe even replace J-COPE with another entity. I think anybody who's looked at this objectively would say, you know, the policing of and oversight of ethics in state government just is not functioning, and we need a better way to do it and a more independent way to do it.
Well, Tom DiNapoli, part of the problem with that is you can set up a commission, but if the governor's going to have the major picks on that, and then you're going to ask the governor to heed the restrictions, well, it stinks.
Yeah, I mean, you need independence, so whether you change the who appoints how many. I think Senator Liz Krueger, certainly a great reformer. I think she has a proposal to have the judiciary largely be the ones to pick who would be on the Ethics Commission or whatever the oversight body would be. I mean, I think these are absolutely fair issues to raise and important questions to raise. And if the legislature has the appetite to come up with reform there, I think that would be welcome. I think some of the ideas have been floating around, even for the legislature, in terms of limiting outside income. You know, that was something talked about an awful lot a few years ago. It sounded like they wanted to move in that direction. Never happened. You know, so I think with everything else going on, getting back to ethics reform, changing the J-COPE process, all of that would be welcome.
Okay, so I have a question for you. It's a serious question. Put on your thinking cap. Yes or no? You're running for governor.
The answer is no. I'm running for controller.
Right. But might we see you run for governor, assuming that Andrew Cuomo steps back and doesn't run again?
Look, I'd be falsely humble if I didn't say it's very nice when friends, not enemies, mention me in that regard, right? But that has not been the plan, and in speaking with you at the moment, there's been no change in the plan.
Right, right. So, are you running for governor? Okay.
I think I answered that already.
Okay.
even in French, Madame Birnbaum would say no. It's the same. It's the same word in other language.
No.
N-O-N.
Now, what about the New York GOP? Is it dead? Is it moribund? I mean, independent voters outnumber Republicans in New York. Can they make a comeback? Those Republicans and win statewide office? I mean, I always remember Mario being beaten by George Pataki.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah. The Republican Party is still here. I mean, it may not be my parents' Republican Party. My parents were, and my grandparents were all Republicans on Long Island back when that was a very strong Republican area, which, of course, it isn't anymore. There have been big demographic changes in the state and big political changes as well. But the Republicans are there. If they default to a Trumpian style of expressing opinions on public policy, they're going to stay in the wilderness for the foreseeable future. So I think they really need to do their own soul searching. You mentioned George Pataki, who I served with in the legislature. He certainly was someone who, on many issues, would be easily defined as a moderate. He certainly wasn't an extremist and did not resort to rhetoric that was inflammatory, and that was part of the reason why he was able to win. I don't know that George Pataki could win right now either, given how the state has changed in terms of the numbers, as you point out. But I think people should not count out the Republican Party. When I look at the state picture, they have great strength, particularly at the local level in many parts of certainly Long Island and many parts of upstate New York as well. Obviously not so much in the city outside of Staten Island. But look, anybody that thinks the Democratic Party should take things for granted are missing the reality of the world. And that's why, from my point of view as a Democrat, I do get concerned when our party seems to, fall into fighting with ourselves, as Democrats often are known to do, because splits within the Democratic Party will only create opportunities for the Republicans to come back. And I'm not saying that's where we're at right now, but you even saw as part of the state budget process some rhetoric that seemed to get a little too heated for my preference in terms of how Democrats should treat each other.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about climate change. Earth Day is this week.
Yep.
Now you have an aggressive climate action plan for the pension fund, which has a lot of money. How much is in that pension fund now?
We are probably around $250 billion right now.
That's a fair chunk of change.
And we've really grown back from the losses that we had at when COVID first hit. Yep.
Interesting. So how do you get the pension fund to set net zero emissions by 2040, 2050? I don't know.
Well, we pegged at 2040. Yeah, I mean, most of the experts say at 2050, the latest net zero for the global economy, and we picked the more aggressive goal of 2040 for our portfolio to be net zero in terms of carbon emissions. So we integrate environment and also social and governance considerations in all of our investment decisions. We have a climate action plan that includes engaging with companies and policy advocacy and pressing companies to develop business plans that are in conformance with the Paris Agreement setting minimum standards for transition readiness to the low carbon economy. And in cases where companies don't conform to that, we may restrict or divest investments. In fact, we just announced very recently another step in divestment with regard to oil sands companies, but also proactive, seizing on opportunities. We just announced this week $400 million more as part of our Sustainable Investing and Climate Solutions program, new investments with alternative and clean energy opportunities. So, we consider this a risk to our portfolio, the risk of climate change. So we're trying to de-risk the fund, because as an investor, we're looking out for our members' benefits, keep their retirement security strong. And it's also important to our planet, you know, which is why it's important in the context of Earth Day for everybody to realize that we have a short time frame to really address this issue of climate change. And investors like pension funds need to be part of the solution.
Let's talk a little bit, if we can, Tom DiNapoli, about the budget. $212 billion plan. Things seem to work out much better since New York received federal relief. First, where are we financially in New York State? Second, what's your financial analysis of the budget plan so far? For example, taxing the rich.
Well, we're certainly in much better shape for a couple of reasons. One of them has to do with the change in the administration in Washington, and having Chuck Schumer as Senate Majority Leader was a great help in getting the American Rescue Plan enacted, and New York benefiting. I mean, New York State getting over $12 billion directly to the state, and money for local government, school districts, health care as well. So that has certainly put us in a much stronger position than we thought we might have been in going back a few months ago. I also have to say the economy starting to come back. You know, while there are certainly still families that have been hurting and certain business sectors have still been hard hit by the pandemic, some of the other sectors have been doing better than anticipated. Take Wall Street, financial services for one. Certainly we saw that with the bonus report that we put out. So revenue starting to come back, more money coming out of Washington. And the legislature and the governor made a judgment that there were important investments, expenditures that had been put off, particularly with education, health care, help for those who have been displaced by the pandemic and the economy, you know, help for people behind on rent, small businesses, excluded workers, you know, go down the list. The judgment was made to come up with the money for them. And part of the solution to that, right, because we always say if you're going to spend the money, where are the revenues, was the increase in the personal income tax. So, you know, we're still finalizing our analysis of the budget. What we're going to look to is really long term. Is this spending level based on the revenues that are expected? Is it sustainable? And I still think that's a fair question. We need more information from the updated state financial plan to get some insight into that. And, you know, the revenues, take, for example, sports, mobile sports betting, right? They added that. Yeah. You know, are those projected revenues, I think, was it $500 million over the next couple of years? How realistic is that? Very often.
What do you think?
I've always had my doubts. Anytime we expand gaming or gambling, it never comes in as anticipated.
I'm putting some money down that you're going to run for governor, so we'll see.
Then you clearly have an unhealthy addiction to gambling, and we're going to have to put you in an intervention program.
That's right. Now, the governor said he needed $16 billion to make up the loss in the budget. Now he got $12 billion, but we seem to be flush. So what's going on?
Well, because, you know, money is coming in, as we've pointed out over the past several months, higher than the Division of Budget projected. The revenues have been bouncing back. You know, we're not back to where we want to be, but bouncing back more quickly than we thought in light of the pandemic. And obviously the revenue sources, you know, and certainly the tax increases being part of it, that certainly explains why there's been a fair amount of money around to spend.
Huh. Was the governor weakened by all of these accusations about his activities in the budget? Could you tell?
Well, look, I mean, the way New York, the process is set up, the governor always has a strong hand in these negotiations. So I think it would be fair to say, though, that given, you know, I think the bigger change in dynamic is the fact that you've got, you know, these overwhelming majorities in the Senate and in the Assembly, veto-proof majorities. And I think, you know, despite some of the differences ideologically within the respective conferences, generally a fair amount of unity. So I think you saw a stronger legislature because of the result of the 2020 elections, and I think that strengthened their hand. You have a lot of new people too, Alan, and they certainly have not been shy in terms of expressing opinion and preference and being strong negotiators.
So New York has legalized recreational marijuana. Are you going to be, lighten up?
No, I will. I don't expect to be.
Me neither. Okay. And then I wanted to ask you whether you are for taxing the rich.
Well, look, I mean, New York.
Soaking the rich.
New York has a progressive income tax structure, and there's no doubt that while many families in New York have been hurt by the economic devastation of the pandemic, other folks have been doing very well. I mean, I mentioned financial services before. We like them to do well because we tax them. And I think we need to not lose sight of the fact that a small percentage of New Yorkers pay an outside percentage of the personal income tax already. So can some of those folks pay more? You know, absolutely. Are some of them even willing to pay more? Absolutely. But
absolutely
we need to
not.
See. Well, what we really need to see, because there is volatility, right, in tax revenue, whether or not the expectation of what we're going to raise, in fact, is going to be a reality. You know, will we lose some of these? Yeah.
Listen, I'm running out of time, so you got to keep it very, 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 very short. All right.
Okay.
The New York City mayoral race. Andrew Yang's in the lead. Are you endorsing Yang?
I'm not endorsing anybody in that race.
But you must have a secret favorite, right?
Well, if it's, that wouldn't be a secret if I tell you. I don't reside in New York City. I won't be voting there. So, you know, it's up to the people in New York City to figure that one out.
Okay,
they got a number of good candidates, there.
Yeah, and a number of bad ones. Are you able to audit all nursing homes across the state? I mean, how do you do that? Because nursing homes always comes on everybody's problematic list.
Well, particularly with regard to the Medicaid program, obviously we audit in that regard. We've done audits of nursing homes, and we will continue to do audits of nursing homes.
Okay. As Madame Beerbaum once said, Controller Tom DiNapoli, au revoir.
Au revoir. Très bien.
Fill the reservoir. So goodbye, Tom DiNapoli. We'll see you the next time.
Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.